When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to the Testudo Times Podcast Network.
Hey guys, and welcome to the latest Testudo Times Outtakes Podcast. I'm your host, Lila Bromberg, here with Matt Levine and Jordan Gold. And today we're joined by one of the Maryland basketball greats. We're joined by Gravis Vasquez. What's going on?
Good. Everything is good. Thank you for having me here. I'm happy to be here with you guys. Missing my Terps, missing my family in Maryland. So thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we're excited to, you know, talk about your career, both, you know, in high school at Maryland and in the NBA. So I guess we'll just kind of get started with the beginning of it. You know, you were born in Venezuela. You've talked a lot over the years about that experience for you, you know, moving over to the U.S. when you were a teenager. You know, what went into that decision to come over for you, and, you know, how tough of a transition was that?
Well, it was a dream of mine going to college. At that time, I came here to the United States. I think September 25th of 2004. I remember because my mother's birthday is on September 25th. So that was a tough day in our family because my mom and dad got divorced. So I had to leave Venezuela and come to the United States. I remember landing in D.C., Reagan Airport, and Coach David Atkins, my high school coach, he was the assistant coach for Stu Vedder, picked me up from the airport. And then it was, ever since then, my life completely changed. You know, I grew up in a different culture, different language, and leaving my family was extremely tough. But the dream of mine was making it to college and eventually making it to the NBA. So I was on a mission. As a young kid, I was pretty much secure what I wanted. Wasn't really wasting any time or trying to play games around. I was really, really focused. So when I got to Montrose Christian School, and Stu Vedder is like my stepfather right nowadays. I love Coach Vedder. He's a great man, and I love the whole Montrose Christian School family. They really supported me. So imagine a kid from Venezuela that couldn't speak any English and didn't know anything about the culture, but only McDonald's, NBA, and NFL, and college. So it was an extremely tough transition for me. But Coach Vedder, David Atkins, and everyone in Montrose made it really, really good. Made it easy for me to make that transition and become a regular student. So because at the time, and even now, you have to get good grades and do well school in order for you to actually play on the basketball team. So, and when I got there, Stu, Coach Vedder thought that I was 6'11". I ended up being 6'5", 6'4", at that time. And he was like, I thought you were a center. What are you doing here? So he couldn't really take me back. And I was like, no, I'm 6'4". It's really, really skinny, 6'5". And my life completely changed. Imagine, I got to Montrose with M1 shoes. I have one pair of M1 shoes when M1 was a brand back in those days. And I couldn't really afford Jordans back home. So I'm going to Montrose, and I see who was sponsoring Montrose. And I'm like, nah, this is not true. It was Jordan, the brand. So imagine wearing Jordan through my high school career. I only played 2 years in high school. And growing up, it was really hard for me to afford, or my family, to buy me shoes, Jordan shoes. So it was a lot of different things in my mind going through, because I went through a lot. First of all, you know, the language barrier is tough. even your classmates, your teammates, sometimes they make fun of you. They don't really establish conversations with you because they know you don't understand. So it was kind of rude, but I was a tough kid. Like I said at the beginning, I came here for a mission. I wasn't trying to make friends or become someone that it wasn't really in my plan or my plans. So it was a tremendous experience my junior year in high school. I wasn't really playing that much. I was already the best player, in Venezuela at that age. I was like 16 years old at that time. And I was really bowling. I was really doing well with my national team. I was the best player in Caracas and the whole country at that age. And I got to be able to have this scholarship to go to Montrose, and I took it, and it changed my life ever since, because my senior year, then KD transferred from Oakview Hill to Montrose. And then everything began with, like, my family, my mom and dad getting divorced in Venezuela, hoping that I get a scholarship to come to the United States. And I got my I-20, which is the visa to be here in the United States as a student. And then all of a sudden, like, I go to a high school that is sponsored by Jordan, and I couldn't really afford paying for a pair of one of those shoes. And then I had a great junior year and a senior year. And when I getting acclimated to the whole system, KD transfer to Montrose. Imagine that. So by that time, I was really upcoming and doing really, really well. It was KD. We had a great team. We had Taishi Ito, Ben Thomas. Really outstanding to Adrian Bowie, ended up playing with me in Maryland. So my life was, I was living a dream. A kid it was in Caracas where everyone played baseball, no one plays basketball. All of a sudden it's like too close at the highest level in basketball, high school basketball. So it was a tremendous experience. And our senior year was, something that no one can take away from me. I graduated from high school with Kevin Durant and Adrian Bowie and Taishi Ito, Darren Bowie, and all my teammates in high school and my classmates. That was a tremendous, that was unbelievable to me. I'm never gonna forget that. I'm thankful, and I can never pay that back because they did so much and they helped me so much to become who I am now in Miami. Imagine that. I'm still living the dream in Miami, living with my family and doing things that I always dream about doing.
So you mentioned playing with Kevin Durant, and I'm sure that was pretty crazy with how big his recruitment was. What was it like playing alongside Kevin Durant, and are you guys still close to this day?
It was a great experience, man. KD was a young kid at that time, and I met his family, his mom, his dad, his brothers, and everyone that was around him was really humble people that needed to work each and every day to afford transportation, food, and normal people. Like I grew up as well. Like my family was, we couldn't really afford what we can afford now. Obviously God gave us the talent and that, not everyone has that. So to me, everything that KD has, he earned it. He deserved it. He worked hard, great guy. We still have a relationship. We respect each other. Like I say, no one is going to take away that time where we spent it together. We fought together. We competed together. We cussed each other in practice. We fight each other in practice. We got better. And guess what happened at the end? He is who he is, and I became an NBA player. And 90% of the players in the NBA are role players. It's only 5-6 super, superstars. Everyone else is a role player making millions of dollars. So KD was a tremendous thing for me because he had all the attention, all the media, all the colleges, everything. And all of a sudden, I'm the second best player on the team. So I was getting some love without asking for any love. So it was really cool going through the whole experience. Nike sending him shoes and trying to recruit him. A lot of media, everyone in our games. He was full house every game, packed. Everyone wanted to see us. And I just needed that because I came from the hood back home, basically, trying to make a name of myself. And then playing with KD, getting all that attention that he was getting, it was kind of helping me to you know, to grow my name.
So we'll transition into your career at Maryland. Obviously, you had a lot of great moments, and I'm sure you have a lot of memories, but if you have to hone it down to just one favorite memory at Maryland, what would that be for you?
So many, man. Best 4 years of my life. I still get emotional. I'm so involved with the school, and that really, high school was unbelievable. College was something remarkable. To this day, I still, like, I want to get back. I want to be back. I want to somehow, like, if I want to still play, I want to still recovering and all that. But Maryland, when you mention Maryland, the University of Maryland, it's my heart. It's everything. I can't thank them enough. Like, Gary, everyone, the students when I was there, the fans, and memories, so many. Many great games, many battles, many different experiences that I had to, you know, to live. And the one that I just got out of my, like, through my head right now, I remember one game, one practice, we finished a game and I was shooting the ball. I was hectic. It wasn't that I didn't care. I'm still passionate. I love what I do. I'm passionate. I'm respectful. I'm professional. So coming from a different culture, I think at the end we connected just because you guys got to know me. You knew my intentions were to represent the school at the highest level. It wasn't never to make fun of somebody or bully anyone. No, I was embracing Maryland. Like Gary, to this day, is a guy that I die for. Gary Williams. So I remember one game I shot the ball a lot. I wanted to win and I shot the ball a lot. So I'm talking to Gary. Gary is the most mellow person that I ever met. Like, people think, oh, he's cussing people out, sweating in and out. Hey, Gary is the coolest coach. His knowledge and everything for the game is unbelievable. Hall of Famer. We miss him. It was hard when he left. But in practice the next day, he goes, Graves, I think you shot the ball too much. And I took it personal, you know, and we had that relationship. We spoke many times. Like, he goes, like, I think you should be able to facilitate more because you're a passer. You can make people around you better. You got to build confidence. So he said that, and obviously I was, yes, sir. I never disrespect my coach or anything. Like I said, I'll go any battle, I'll go with him, and I'll die for him. And I say, yes, sir, yeah, you know, and I'm competitive. So I'm going inside my head, like, what the flip, you know? He telling me not to shoot. Like, if I don't shoot, we're not going to win. So then I go to one of the assistant coaches, and he was my player development coach, which is Rob Eason. So I go to Rob. He's like, Rob, why is he telling me that? So Rob was more, you know, direct. He was like, hey, he's right. You're shooting the ball too much, and I don't think you're doing a good job helping your teammate. So the following game, I think it was against Clemson. I don't remember what team we play against. I didn't take one shot, and I think I recorded most assists in one game or second. I don't know. Steve Blake was first, and I was second. I don't know. I had 17 assists, right? But going to halftime, you know, pet talk and everything, then we got to come out to warm up. He was like, here, stop. He stopped me. He was like, hey, Gravy, stop. Hey. So he was like, he kind of cussed me out. He was like, I want you to shoot, so you know. I was like, oh, but you told me in practice you don't want me to shoot. So we winning by 20. I got 10 assists. I already got 20 points, you know, without scoring. So that's unbelievable. So I was trying to be a smart ass with him. So he started laughing. We had a great game. We ended up winning the game and I had a double-double, but I only took like five shots or three shots, something like that, five shots. And then after the game, he was like, you can't be like that. You need to be more mature. He gave it to me because he thought I was fronting him and what he was telling me. But it was never like that. It was like, I was really competitive. I'm like, oh, you don't want me to shoot? Well, I'm going to be the best passer that you ever had in your whole coaching career. So I went out there and got 17 assists. And I remember that, and it was stuck in my head just because, yes, we beat North Carolina, UNC being the number one team in the whole nation, and we beat them at the Dean Smith. I think my sophomore year, we beat Duke many times. We were the last team beating Duke. when they won the championship. I really never had a legit center. Our center was Big Neal, and then Jordan Williams at the end, my senior year, came in and see what happened. So I love our team. I love the personnel, and we got better each and every year, and I got better with the team, and the team got better with me, and I think we all got better. And that's what, to me, that's what it's all about. So that's one of the memories that come to me, because Gary was so crucial, and he made a tremendous impact in my career and in my life as a normal human being.
And you were really well known for, you know, your passion, enthusiasm, and emotion on the court. You know, why was it important to you to just, you know, be your authentic self and not really hold that back, especially, you know, at the beginning of your career where maybe people didn't understand it as much?
Imagine in nowadays, now everyone is like, wow, yeah, you got to express yourself, you got to be yourself. Back in those days, it was kind of hard to you know, express yourself. People were like, no, that's not normal. You can't be doing that. And nowadays, I was preaching that when I was in high school. Like, it's great to be yourself. I don't care who you like. It's great to be you. It's great to be each and every one of you. Like, you don't have to change who you are to please anyone. You know, as long as you're respectful and professional and understand how to treat people and human, I think you can accomplish a lot of things. And back in those days, I was really judged by the way I played, the way I expressed my emotions and all that. But I was just being myself. And like I say, I was never trying to disrespect anyone. I just came up through a different culture. So it was hard to adjust to something that I wasn't used to it. So I had to... And nowadays, they see me now as an American, and rightfully so. Like, I feel American. I'm Americanized now. I have 17 years in this country. I went to high school here. I went to college here. I'm playing the NBA, still work in basketball. But at that time, I was not trying to be no one else but Gravis Vasquez. And at the end of the day, the results were there. I mean, I had success. And I stuck with my personality, with my work ethic, with my professionalism. Like, I got my diploma, I graduated. Nobody did my homework for me. Nobody went to class for me. I did it myself, obviously, with the support system that the University of Maryland has and the athletics department and all that. So it's great to be me. It's great to be you guys. I don't think I needed to change anything. And to me, that's the biggest message to the youth in nowadays. Hey, be yourself. Believe in yourself. No matter what, bet on yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. And later on, that was the major key to be in the NBA. If you hang around NBA players, they're all sharks. They all think they're the best. They all think they you know, sometimes like, wow, what? No, you have to think like that. I call it like, and I don't want to cuss, but you have to be a motherfucker. You have to be crazy. You have to be, you have boundaries. I mean, imagine one night competing against Chris Paul. What you going to tell Chris Paul? No, Chris Paul, just go slow and soft. Don't go too hard on me. Westbrook. Imagine guarding Westbrook. You know, you have to be yourself and believe in yourself in order to succeed and have success in everything you do in life. So I would just be myself.
And you became well known for your shimmy move. How did that become a thing? Was it just like an in the moment thing you came up with?
In the moment, yes. Well, I grew up watching the guy. His name is Armando Becker. He used to play for our national team back in '92. Venezuela played against the Dream Team in Barcelona to go to the finals. We played in the semifinals again against the Dream. Imagine that. So it was a guy. That guy was a rookie at the time. But I grew up watching the professional league in Venezuela. So I watch a lot of basketball. I'm a fan. I love the game. I study the game. I've always been so. This guy, Armando Becker, every time that he made a great play, he started doing the shimmy. So when he started doing the shimmy, then imagine playing in at that time, the Comcast Center and 18,000 people there, a lot of students and a lot of people. And you like the adrenaline and everything. I was just showing my personality, like just came out of nowhere in the moment. Like it was unbelievable, funny, but no, at times people were like, questioning me, like, why is he, like, you gotta be respect, like, respect again. I always respected the game, and I was always, even in college, I was professional. Like, and I wasn't trying to like bully anyone, but I wanted to enjoy playing the game, and that's what I did. And at the end, like I said, we connected because you guys got to know me a little better.
So for me and for a lot of Maryland fans, I think that your matchups against Duke, and in particular your senior year when you guys beat Duke when they were number four on your senior night, I think that that's what stands out for a lot of Terp fans. What did that Duke rivalry mean to you?
Oh, it meant a lot. I got a lot of respect for Duke and Coach K. I ended up playing against Coach K a couple more times with our national teams and then the Dream Team and the U.S. team and all that. So, you know, I think if you want to be an NBA player, you got to be in the United States. If you want to be a soccer player like my son, I don't know where he wants to be a soccer player, but he wants to be un futbolista in Spanish. So you got to go to Europe. I think the best soccer is in Europe. So if you want to play against the best at that time, the ACC was the best, and competing against Duke and UNC and those two schools in particular, it was a lot of media, a lot of TV. It was an opportunity. Like, people were going to watch you, scouts, everyone. So I'm not underestimating the rest of the school, but that was a particular thing. And you guys know, like, you want to play against Duke because you kind of hate them. You don't hate them, but they created this movie, like, nah, Duke, we just hate them. We just got to, you know, we got to beat them. And the whole atmosphere was created to, you know, to compete at the highest level, and it was always a national TV game, and to me that was the time, man. Like I say, I was a kid from Caracas. Yeah, I just needed a little branch, a little space for me to go in and go out there and do my job and show the world that I was capable to play against the best talent in all college basketball.
And then you obviously mentioned the ACC being such a tough conference, so competitive, and all those great players come out of there. But specifically you averaging nearly 20 points in that last season at Maryland, and you won the ACC Player of the Year that year in 2009-2010. So what did just winning that award with so many guys you're going up against, what did that mean to you?
Man, it's a blessing. Now that I know so much about basketball here in the United States, in college basketball, high school, and at that time, like I said, I have no idea. I was in the moment. Imagine in high school, a good memory, we play Oak Hill and Montrose Christian. We play in D.C. To me, it was the best high school game ever that we played or been played in D.C. And I was struggling with my English still. And then I told Coach Bettis, like, hey, I have to guard Ty Lawson. Yo, defensa. So it was funny that I didn't know who Ty Lawson was. I didn't know Jeff Allen at the time and Nolan Smith and Michael Beasley. I'm like, I don't care. I don't give a crap. I just want to go out there and compete. And that was my mentality. And it still is. Like, I don't care who you are. And then later on, then I play against the Dream Team and Kobe, my idol. And we're missing, and this is so bad that everything that happened to him and his family and the rest of the people that was there too. And then they don't play against Kobe, and Kobe said in a press conference that he was going to guard the best players of the opposite national team opponents. So the first game was against Venezuela. He started guarding me. So I was not afraid. I wanted to compete. I don't care who you are. I'm going, like, this is my money too. Like, I'm going after you. And it was Kobe Bryant and a lot of young players and a lot of people think that he's strong. Like, you have to admire them and respect who they are because they're somebody very important. But if you in that moment, you have to compete. You have to show the world that you're actually capable to compete and to do great things too. Like, everyone have two hands, two feet. So, like, you don't, they're not really monsters or anyone that we can't really do anything. So, playing to me was always about competing against the best of the best and playing against those players in the ACC and winning the ACC Player of the Year to me was a tremendous blessing. Not only that, imagine I ended up winning the Bob Cousy Award, being the best point guard in the whole nation, which doesn't make sense because you win the whole point guard, and then later on the NBA is different, totally different game. And draft, the number one pick in the draft, 2010, was John Wall. So you win the best. I ended up winning the best point guard, Bob Cousy Award, in the whole college basketball level. It says a lot about my whole career in Maryland and my coaches and everyone and the whole support system that I have. So it was a blessing, man. I still can't believe everything that I accomplished, but I do in a way because I worked so hard and I'm still prepared to go to battle. And I believe in preparation. You have to prepare yourself. And that's what I learned from Gary, being, you know, having knowledge of the game and preparing yourself to do whatever you want in life. You have to prepare. You have to get ready and be ready. I'll say it again, be ready. No, don't get ready. Be ready.
And, you know, you get drafted and you're the first Venezuelan player drafted in the league. And then, you know, during the 2012-13 season, you led the NBA with 704 total assists and also averaged 13.9 points per game. You know, growing up, you know, in Venezuela, is that while that, you know, basketball was always your goal and something that you focus on, did you ever imagine that, you know, something like that was possible to reach that level?
Like I say, I mean, imagine talking to your own self. And I was that kid talking to my own self and saying, bro, imagine if you made the last shot. It's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you made that last shot in college or NBA, and all of a sudden, everything, you know, I was dreaming, and all of a sudden, I wake up and I'm going through the whole dream. So everything that I did in Maryland and everything that I did in college and high school, even right now in the NBA, it was all hard work. I cannot give you any other formula. Like that was hard work. Like I was like you guys. Like I was trying to get an opportunity, but a lot of young players, they think, well, a lot of humans, they just think like the opportunity, they're just gonna come to them. No, I was searching for an app. I was out there searching for an opportunity. I wanted to, even during my draft workouts, I was always searching for Jrue Holiday, Ty Lawson, but they didn't want to compete against me because everyone knew they were gonna be a high pick. But if I was able to compete against them, then I was gonna have more value, or not more value, but I was gonna have more value myself. So coaches and scouts in the NBA, they were gonna say, like, if this kid can play against these players, then he's a legit NBA player. So I have to earn it. I went through the whole draft training, having 30 different job interviews with 30 different teams. So you're talking about, you know, ACC Player of the Year, Bob Cousy Award, and my jersey retired in Maryland. Like, it was a lot of nights that a lot of people went out, but I was in the gym working out. I wake up a lot of mornings. I was jogging to the mat because David Atkins then switched to the mat high school. He was one of the assistant coaches and he used to work me out. So because I didn't have a car, I had to jog, and that was my warm up to go to the mat and come back walking from the mat to campus. So that was every morning, you know, the last two years in college. Then sometimes he came to Maryland. Then he got the job in Maryland as an assistant coach with the girls, with the female team, and then I was able to work out with him. So I was always trying to get better. I wasn't just, you know, an average player. No, and I was. If you see, I how many times did I dunk in college? Like twice, mm-hmm. Once, I don't know. So I have to upgrade myself, upgrade my game, and get better. So I did a lot of work. I still do a lot of work. I'm trying to recover from an injury that I haven't played in almost 3 years, and I still see myself as an NBA player. And then a lot of people see me as a coach, and I can, yes, I love it. I'm a point guard. Of course, I'm going to have a voice. Players are going to listen to me, and I play in the NBA. I compete against the best of the best. And if I wouldn't have this injury, I wouldn't be playing right now and play, what, 12 to 15 years, because my game always been solid. I wasn't trying to be no one that it wasn't myself. So everything that I accomplished, It was just hard work, sacrifice. It was to me, it was a movie, and I believe in my movie. Like, I'm not a Steven Spielberg, but I direct my movie, and it worked pretty good. So I think if you work hard and you sacrifice and you be disciplined, things will work out for you.
So looking back on your NBA career, would you say that you have a favorite game memory?
Well, favorite game memory, when I got to the NBA, you know, being the best player in college, at school, and you get to the NBA, you're a rookie, Lionel Hollins. You go in the mornings, you have to be like 3.5 hours before practice, and you go say good morning, and the head coach don't even say good morning back. He don't even look at rookies, and I'm like, what? You most don't read the Washington Post or, you know, the Diamondback paper, because I'm somebody, you know? So I was still trying to, like, that transition was hard. So I remember one day working out with Coach Mighty Mouth, lefty, point guard from Portland. Let's see if you guys know. Small, he was drafted by Toronto.
Damon Stoudemire?
Yes, Stoudemire. Coach Stoudemire, so Damon. And he was my player development coach. So one time, the whole front office was watching a workout of mine. That day we had a game. I was shooting around. The rookies had to work out, so I had to go get some work because I wasn't playing that much. But I was always searching for an opportunity. I was always looking and making eye contact with the coaches. I wasn't gonna give up that easy. So then he was working me out, playing him. I was playing him one on one, and the whole front office was there. And after my workout, they called me, was like, I'm gonna send you because you haven't been playing, so we're gonna send you to a G League. At that time was the G League. That was, there was another name.
The D League.
Yeah, before Gatorade took over with a sponsorship.
Yeah, then the G League now. So, and they broke my heart in a way, because like, why are you sending me there? Like, I'm not good enough to be in the NBA. So, because I was always searching for an opportunity, I go back to my place, and I was with my friend, Luis Bordon, he's from Maryland. He was helping me out with my whole beginnings in the NBA. And I say, bro, you're going to have to stay here, because they're going to send me to a D-League, and I'm going to be there for a little while. So that night we play against Boston. That night they told me that, because I was shooting around. So I'll go to the game and get there early, do my regular routine workout and all that stuff. So I got to wear a uniform. So I was listed on the roster, the active player. And all of a sudden, my colleague got in foul trouble. So I don't know where, because I was ready. I wasn't trying to get ready. I was ready. Lionel Hollins didn't have any other more options but to put me in the game. And we were down by 7 or 8 against the Boston Celtics, the big three. So I come in and I changed the whole dynamic of the game. We went to overtime. We ended up winning the game with me finishing the game. And from there, guys, my career changed. Like, never went to the G League. I became a solid point guard. I was able to even come off the bench. Like, oh, he's a backup. I was absolutely fine, because I knew I was able to start for any team at any given point. Now, like, I do think like a coach, because you always have to gain coach trust. No, the coaches don't have to trust the players. Players have to gain trust from the coaches. So I was like, I had to please my coaches. So all I gotta do is just be solid. So what are they thinking when their superstar or their starting point guard is not playing or going through an injury? So he goes, can I trust Travis to start? Or we need to make a trade or bring another player or find another backup. Now, I always made coaches believe that if any starting point guard wasn't able to play, I was there to play and to perform and to win basketball games. So that's why I was always playing minutes. I averaged, 25 to 28 minutes a game. And I won games in the playoff, and I competed at the highest level. So to me, that was all about, I'm still all about competing and making the right decisions, even on and off the court, so the coaches can actually trust me, and they did, and I was be able to perform.
You played for the Milwaukee Bucks back in 2015 and 2016, the second year of Giannis Antetokounmpo's career. And just kind of give your first initial impression of him, and did you really see him panning out to being this MVP talent that he is today?
Totally. I think Giannis is he's going to be the face of the NBA, super talented player. And the great thing about great players in nowadays, or even in the whole history of sports, they work hard, man. I think he works hard. He's professional. He's very mature. He comes from another country, too. So that gave him an edge to like, okay, I'm not really American, but I am. So I have to prove myself each and every day. And I think he handles himself the right way. And to me, it's not. In no time, he'll be the face of the MVP. Imagine winning the MVP. That's remarkable right there. So I always knew he was going to be as good as he is, and I think it's just the beginning. I think he hasn't really got to the peak of his career, so he's going to continue to get better. At some point, he got to realize that he have to do a little bit more to win an NBA championship. He have to be a killer. If you watch The Last Dance, you watch Jordan and the previous players that won it, even LeBron, that mentality that I have to do not a little more, a lot more to win. That's what he takes. And it goes from the offseason all the way to the NBA Finals. So I think that's the process that he's trying to figure it out. And it takes time.
And one of the things you mentioned earlier was just, you know, dealing with your ankle injury was something that you dealt with through the latter part of your career, and you've, you know, been grinding over the past few years to recover from that. You know, what's kind of the latest with your process on that, and are you still kind of eyeing a basketball comeback?
Yes. I was hired by the Erie BayHawks as an associate head coach. I took the job. I just wanted to be around basketball. I think the whole franchise of the Pelicans, New Orleans Pelicans, my son was born there. I love the city of New Orleans. They gave me a great opportunity, and I took the job. I felt good about it, but you guys know me, I'm competitive. I wanted to do a great job, and I thought I was able to, but I wasn't really healthy enough, and it was hard to continue with the job, because as a coach, you have to stand up a lot, you have to walk a lot, you have to watch a lot of film and do a lot of different things that sometimes players don't, they don't know. So that little taste of going through a coaching career, it really helped me appreciate what coaches do, because they do a lot. So I was doing my job, which is a lot, and then I had a lot of fun, but at the end of the day, it was hard. My ankle was swollen. I wasn't really able to walk properly. So I was like, well, if I do a full year, maybe summertime I have surgery and do again. So my problem is kind of serious, and now finally I'm making progress. I had surgery in November in Italy with the best ankle doctor that I know in the whole world, because trust me, I went around the whole world, and then it was a great surgery. I was doing rehab there, and I had to come back to the United States with the whole pandemic. So I continued my rehab here in my house. I have a physio with me, and I do some work in my house and trying to stay in shape, and then continue to make progress with my ankle. So I think in 8 or 10 months, I'll make a decision whether, you know, I retire officially or I try to play, whether it's the NBA or any other league in the world. I just don't want to retire by an injury. So I think I'm going to be able to accomplish it, and I'm going to be able to do it. I just can guarantee that. I just got to work, and then it takes a lot of work, and that's what I'm doing right now. So I think eventually I'm going to go back to Italy, Bologna, and I'm going to finish my cycle with my rehab there. And we'll see what happens. You know, I still believe I have a little chance, because my game playing the NBA, But if I desire to be done with basketball, then I like the coaching, the scouting, the obviously you want to be a GM, put a team together. But who knows? You know, the opportunities always comes, and the crazy things about basketball is that you don't know. You know, when you build a great reputation, something else can come up, and you'd be like, "Wow, really? You want me to coach this high school?" But and then they make you think. So as of right now, because the last 3.5 years I've been traveling around the world dealing with my injury, I want to enjoy my family and I want to get another gig of playing basketball and see if I can do it.
So based off what you just said, it seems like it would be a little bit down the road, but if the opportunity did arise at one point, would you consider coming back and working for Maryland basketball?
No brainer, of course. I think to me, like I say, and I want this to sound very respectful, because I respect Coach Turgeon and everyone, the whole coaching staff that is there. They're doing a great job. But if the opportunity comes and I'm able to do it, first I want to be prepared. I don't want to go there unprepared, because it's a big school with a huge reputation, and it's not easy to be Coach Turgeon, or it's not easy to be a head coach or an assistant coach and do all the diligence. So, well, when you think about me, yes, that's a dream of mine. Eventually, become a coach from the University of Maryland and be able to compete and represent the school again, but now in the coaching side. So I wouldn't say it's going to be right now or in the next couple of years, but I think eventually if the opportunity comes, I think, and when I feel ready, because I will get ready to be ready, I think I will take a job like that, because I honestly want my kids to go to Maryland, and eventually I would just want to move back to Maryland and raise my kids in Maryland or around the DMV, so I can be around my friends and the people that I basically grew up with, and I just love the whole atmosphere, the whole vibe. I love DC, I love Virginia, I love Maryland. It's cool to go to Baltimore as well, downtown. But like it was a great experience. So I want to really go back. I don't know when, but if you ask me right now, of course it'll be a no brainer. I would love to work for the University of Maryland eventually. But as of right now, I do want to, you know, I want to get prepared, and eventually, if the opportunity comes, I will take a no brainer. I will take the chances of me representing the University of Maryland again.
So before we let you go, we're just going to do some quick and rapid fire question and answer. I'll start it off. Who were your basketball idols growing up?
Growing up, obviously Michael Jordan. I didn't watch his game closely, but everything I read the story and I watched games and everything that he did. Kobe Bryant. To me, numero uno for me, and Mamba mentality. Everything I did was about his mentality. Like, people appreciated him at the end because they thought he was arrogant. Nah. Mamba mentality was a style of life, of living. Kobe Bryant was a human being. Mamba mentality was something different. So I was into Mamba mentality, and I love Kobe as a human as well. So Kobe's numero uno. And a guy named Diego Guevara in Venezuela, he used to be a point guard, played for UNC Charlotte. He used to throw kisses when he played against Cincinnati. And he was the only student athlete married at that time. And everyone knew it, and that's the reason I wear number 21, Diego Guevara.
What is one Venezuelan dish that everyone should try?
Arepas. Arepa is like a corn bread with you can cheese, different. I wouldn't say dishes, different size. Cheese, I like beans as well, ham and cheese. So arepas is the is what I eat the most. But our main dish is pabellón, which is meat, beans, and rice, and plantains. I don't know if you guys know plantains.
Yeah. Sounds very good. What would you say your the best or your favorite Maryland uniform was to wear?
Ooh, you know what? I think all uniforms were unbelievable because when Under Armour family, you know, the Under Armour family, Kevin Plank did an outstanding job with us. He really helped us and hooked us up with the gear and put us in the map with in terms of like fashion. I'm into fashion. So to me, the gold uniform was something special to me. And people like, well, because we won a lot of games with that uniform. So sometimes I used to ask Gary, hey, let's just wear gold. But when you go to a regular color, which is the red one, when you play home, I mean, we have different ones. And right now I know they have more. And right now it's even better. And I have my jersey somewhere. My daughter used to like, because I'm going to put it in my office. So I think the gold uniform was to me the best, and it was special as well.
What was the biggest purchase you made since playing in the NBA or while playing in the NBA?
No, I haven't played almost in 3.5 years, almost 4. So I have to save my money. I'm not going to lie. Right now, eventually, I'm going to have to start working again if you want to keep up with the status and the lifestyle. So, but the biggest thing that I bought was, you know, now they talk about Richard Mille and all that stuff. I was one of the first one buying a Richard Mille back in those days. And some white Richard Mille, white gloss. And then and so a special edition. It was only 75 watches, those in the world. So limited. And it was cool because, like I say, grew up with nothing. And all of a sudden I was able to buy me a Richard Mille. And also for an investment as well. So that was pretty cool.
What was your favorite NBA team that you played for?
Well, I love New Orleans, but I think Toronto Raptors, well, it was so much fun. I think the NBA as a whole is entertainment, and those games at home were unbelievable. Then 5 years after they win a championship, and it makes me feel special, even though that I wasn't on an active team that won a championship, but we built a foundation, a base. So Toronto was cool. It was, to me, the favorite. When I got traded to Milwaukee, I was upset because I wanted to finish my career with Toronto.
What would you say your favorite opposing city or arena to play in was?
NBA?
Yeah, NBA and college, if you will.
Well, it's always good playing in the Staples Center. Madison Square Garden is just a different vibe when you're an NBA player. You go to New York, L.A., like, it's major cities, you know. Chicago, always had great games in those three cities. And then college, I hated Virginia Tech. I mean, I wanted to give it to them every time. So I remember one time I scored like 41 points and I was just letting the whole audience know that, hey, stop saying green card, because now I do have a green card. At the time I have a visa, a student visa, but now I do have a green card. But I, you know, it was cool. We competed, and then at the time, you know, I was resilient. I was to prove them that, hey, don't mess with me. You can't mess with me like that. I'm pretty known in the ACC, so don't be telling me. Don't give me any fuel to motivate myself. You know, don't put gas in my car, because then I'm gonna do it right fast. So Virginia Tech, Duke always was something special, and I think Duke and UNC, because playing the Dean Smith and playing in Duke. Duke, it was always a dream of any student athlete. So you got to respect those two teams, because that's the reality.
Who was the toughest player you had to go up against in college?
I would say Russell Westbrook. UCLA kicked our butt. We played a tournament in Kansas. And he was a prom. And then in the NBA to this day, and he's so out of control at times and you don't know what he's going to do, but he's so smart and he's so active and his energy, unbelievable athlete, one of the best point guards of going to the board offensive rebounds. He gets a lot of offensive rebounds. So a lot of point guards have the tendency to just to watch the ball, and he's jumping over you and getting defensive rebounds. So he's a really good rebounder, and it was hard to guard him. Like, he was very, very tough. It still is.
What about the toughest player to go up against in the NBA?
I don't really play defense on him, but played a lot of games against him, and LeBron is unbelievable. Like, I talk about Jordan and LeBron. We really do have to appreciate what LeBron is doing in nowadays, because we're gonna miss it. Like, I don't care. 6, 9 finals, only winning 3 and whatever, the GOAT, and then, what he's doing for the league and for basketball, we have to be thankful and we have to appreciate what he's doing, because he's an unbelievable talented player, but he's a great human being as well. So to me, credit when credit's due. I think, yes, KD is super, superstar. Stephen Curry, a lot of great players, but LeBron is and look, and he's not my favorite player, but I think LeBron has to be respected and have to be on that conversation of, you know, being one of the best, probably the second best in the whole NBA. And eventually you're going to have to discuss whether he's the best of the history of the game. But what he's done to the game in nowadays, when we have social media, and what he's doing off the court with the school and the academics and everything that he supports, he's going to do a Space Jam. He's doing it all. I think he's a smart businessman. He's a smart player. I think I love what he represents with his family, you know, his wife, his kids. I think that's what I would like. If I'm a college coach, like, look, hey, you're not going to the NBA to get money and go party. No, you go to make money and be able to help a family and get a family and have a family and support your family. So to me, he sent the right signals, and that's what great players should do, and I think he does.
All right, and we'll wrap it up with that. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you for your time. Love you guys. Love my turn. Love Maryland. Hopefully I see you guys soon when I go back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.